Shocking video. A Tesla engulfed in flames near RDU, causing some people to miss their flights. New at 7, WREL explains why this can happen with electric vehicles. Then 600,000 more people in North Carolina will soon have access to healthcare coverage. We talk live with an expert about the positives of Medicaid expansion and the holdups you can expect.
Futurecast shows how long we'll be stuck under the clouds. And an update to the tropical model plots, what we're tracking right now.
So this scene here near RDU, you see the flames they're zooming into. That was near RDU this morning. It kept travelers from getting on their flights. A Tesla Model S caught fire on John Brantley Boulevard, and it backed up traffic for a long time, blocking both lanes. Thanks for being with us. I'm Dan Haggerty.
And I'm Ashley Rowe. You talk about impact. Some travelers didn't make it on time, creating some real problems for their work week. WREL's Monica Casey looks into why this can happen with electric vehicles.
Black burn marks from a vehicle fire are left on this major road leading to the airport. RDU tells me no one in that car was injured.
It's a scene no one wants to see, especially while rushing to catch an early morning flight. A Tesla Model S engulfed in flames, surrounded by first responders.
Hey, this would be a Tesla out at RDU that's fully engulfed. Ask for hazmat to respond. Are we going to need a safety officer, investigator, or WC1 or anything like that?
Amber Craig had a flight scheduled for just after 7. She was caught in the traffic around 5:20.
I could see nothing, just cars, endless cars, and all, however many lanes that is.
Craig was traveling to California for work. Instead of getting on her plane, she spent 40 minutes waiting in traffic, ran into a blocked entrance to a parking garage, and spent 30 minutes trying to catch a shuttle.
I was pretty late, so I didn't loop back and drove home.
A 2020 report by the National Fire Prevention Association says electric vehicle fires can occur when a vehicle is stationary due to extreme temperatures, high humidity, or internal cell failure. According to multiple news stories, if the battery in an electric vehicle catches fire, it can take a lot of water to extinguish. In some cases, the battery can reignite later as well. Despite the frustrating change to her work week, Craig is staying positive about being home in Durham.
It changes my next couple days, makes my days go later into like my life. But to be honest, my children were really happy that I wasn't leaving, so there was a bright side.
At RDU, Monica Casey, WREL News.
According to a 2021 study by Auto Insurance Easy, fully electric vehicles had the fewest number of total fires. That's based on data from the National Transportation Safety Board. WREL reached out to Tesla for comment on this particular fire and whether any other Tesla car fires are under investigation or review. We have not yet heard back.
An update right now in the WREL Live Center about a now confirmed deadly crash in Cumberland County. These are some of the photographs that we got in, and we broke this story at 6 o'clock. This is happening at Reeves Bridge Road near McBride Road there in the Linden area. Highway Patrol confirming for us this is a double fatality. Two people killed in that very serious crash that had the road shut down, likely still closed right now as they're piecing this together, investigating. It's unclear right now exactly what caused the crash. The names of those people involved will certainly follow this story as it develops tonight in Cumberland County.
Awful. All right, Mark, thank you. So Raleigh police, they're stepping up patrols and enforcement against violent crime downtown. This is a response to safety concerns from the people who live there and visit and work there downtown. The Downtown Raleigh Alliance and the police chief, they presented suggestions to a city council today during a meeting. They focus on the downtown transit center, as well as the Glenwood South nightlife district. RPD will add officers, they say, to the units that patrol those areas. In Glenwood South, the police chief is actually urging club owners and bar owners to add metal detectors to try and keep people from bringing in guns and other weapons.
There's not just a one fix to this. We just can't keep throwing officers necessarily. I think we have to use all the tools and all the resources that we have to combat what we're seeing.
The city's also considering making some hiring of some private security for the bus station downtown. Other recommendations include adding lighting and security cameras. The city council committee will continue these discussing all of this at their next meeting. Also this week, we'll be discussing it. We're going to be going in depth on this subject, taking a closer look at some of the ideas that have been brought up at today's meeting. We're going to look at some of those hotspot policing policies, the street lighting, the security cameras, and the private security idea, because other towns have tried things like this for years, and we will go in depth on how they have worked. Let me know what you think about these ideas and improving safety in our cities. Raleigh or otherwise, send me an email, dan@wrl.com. We want to know what you are seeing and hearing out there and what you think about these issues that matter most to you.
Fewer people died from overdoses last month than they did in August of last year. The latest state data shows a nearly 17% decrease. Still, more than 330 people died last month to overdose. More than 2,800 have died so far this year. Every month for the last several years, we've seen an increase in the number of deaths compared to the year prior. Last month was the first decrease in a while. Health officials believe we could be at a point in the crisis where responses are working.
Always hopeful. I mean, I have just so many wonderful stories of people being connected to treatment, doing really well, gainful employment, obtaining their own private health insurance, obtaining housing. And I think that certainly some metrics around the pandemic are certainly improving. We know we still have a lot of work to do in this space.
While the number of fatal overdoses decreased, the number of people treated for overdoses at emergency departments increased.
City leaders in Fayetteville are moving forward with a plan now to turn abandoned motels into transitional housing for people who are homeless. But the plan has hit a little bit of a snag. See, in August, city leaders approved more than $5 million to convert the old Knights Inn on Southeastern Boulevard. But WRL has learned of some plans now to turn it actually into a Holiday Inn Express. City leaders say they'll find another location for the project. However, they still have plans to provide support for those needing help to get back on their feet.
You know, at the end of the day, we're not looking to make this comfortable for people to stay in a bad situation. We want to help them out of that situation. And so connecting them to resources are critical to this recovery process.
The city's moving forward with some projects at three other locations designed to improve the lives of about 125 people who live there.
Farmers in North Carolina will soon start sending more turkeys overseas. A member of the President Biden's cabinet was in Raleigh today promoting the new international trade deal. Governor Roy Cooper met with U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai. Our state is one of the biggest turkey producers in the nation. The Biden administration just finished a deal making it easier for the U.S. to sell turkeys to India, home to more than 1 billion people. It figures to be a big win for our state.
That if we can open more doors across the world, then that will help our farmers here and help the North Carolina economy.
A looming federal government shutdown could put other similar deals on hold. Congress has until the end of the week to reach an agreement.
Federal government shutdown, the longer it lasts, the more impaired our ability to do these types of deals will be.
Tai says it is still too early to tell what this might mean for turkey prices in the grocery stores here at home, but she hopes that what is good for farmers is also good for consumers.
Yeah, we'll see. So the Nash County DSS director we know is out. This is after a months-long investigation by WREL into the death of two children. Up next, why the county leaders there made this call and how the rest of the department found out about it.
Plus, health care coverage for hundreds of thousands of people. But is our state ready for Medicaid expansion? An expert joins us live to break down what we can expect. Mike?
Ashley, a low overcast has settled in. You can see that from our tall tower cam in southeastern Wake County. And there's actually a little bit of drizzle out there as well. I'll show you where that is with the live dual Doppler 5000 radar when we come back.
For the first time, we are hearing from the Nash County leader who removed this woman here from the head of social services, removed her from her office. The move comes months after now a WREL investigation found two children died under the care of Nash County Social Services. WREL's Keenan Willard asked the County Health and Human Services Director why he made the change.
Amy Pridgen-Hamlet was removed as NASH DSS director late last night following a months-long WRL investigation into the deaths of Crystal Lane and Chase Hilliard, and then a state takeover of the Child Welfare Division here at NASH DSS. And the county's Health and Human Services director says even more change could be coming.
For months, Laura Bartholomew has called for the removal of NASH DSS leadership, outraged over the findings of an ongoing WRL investigation into the department. She feels the county's decision to replace Amy Pridgen-Hamlet is a step in the right direction.
For Crystal and for Chase and for all of the children under the care of NASH DSS, I felt like justice had been served.
The move was announced in a memo to staff, with County Health Director Bill Hill writing, Mrs. Sarah Bradshaw will be in the role of interim director until further notice.
The DSS director is still employed as we navigate through this personnel matter.
Hill says Pridgen-Hamlet is working remotely in a different role, and there's been no decision on whether she'll continue to receive her current salary. Her removal comes after a WRL investigation found two children died while in the care of NASH DSS over the past 3 years. One-year-old Chase Hilliard, allegedly killed by his mother in 2020, and eight-year-old Crystal Lane, whose grandmother is accused of beating her to death in February. In both cases, sources tell WRL recommendations were made to NASH DSS leaders to remove the children from their homes, but that action wasn't taken. In August, protesters and one county commissioner called for the removal of three NASH DSS leaders, the director, deputy director, and program administrator.
You said at that time you did not feel that would be the best course of action. So why the different move at this time?
Well, again, this is an interim move, and this is a work in progress.
2 weeks ago, the state announced it would take over child welfare services in NASH DSS, saying after WRL's findings, another child nearly died in August while under NASH DSS care. The state writes, concerns about safety planning have continued, creating a substantial risk to children and have led to children being harmed. The HHS director said the state takeover was a factor in this latest decision. Today, WRL asked him about the deputy director and program administrator.
Is there a discussion right now about potentially removing them from their posts?
We're looking at all angles. We're looking at all our personnel.
Advocates say they'll keep pushing for action to protect the children in the county's care.
We need NASH County DSS. The children that are in troubled homes need NASH County DSS, and they need the people in those positions to do their jobs.
Keenan Willard, WRL News.
We should also mention that we did reach out to Amy Pridgen-Hamlet for a response for her removal, but she has not gotten back to us.
It is official. Medicaid is expanding in North Carolina. This is a big deal. 600,000 more people will gain access to health care coverage starting December 1st. We're talking about coverage for doctor's appointments, maternity care, prescription drugs, and more. North Carolina is now the 40th state to adopt Medicaid expansion. So how did it work out for the other 39? And is our state ready to take it on? Here to answer some of those questions is Mark Holmes, a professor at UNC Chapel Hill's Health Policy and Management Department. Professor Holmes, thank you so much for being here with us tonight.
Great. Thank you, Ashley.
600,000 people, that's a lot of people. Is the state ready to take this on beginning December 1st?
Yeah, this is something that the state and healthcare providers, including hospitals and doctors, have been planning for months, if not years, and excited about this opportunity. And just come December 1, there's been a lot of time and effort built in to be ready, and I think they'll be ready.
The DHHS secretary has talked about his outreach, trying to get with community leaders, faith-based leaders, et cetera, trying to make sure that the awareness is out there. Let's talk about the rural impact on this, because that's part of their focus as well.
Yeah, we know that Medicaid expansion across the other 39 states has generally had a bigger impact in rural areas in terms of coverage and health of the people who are covered, but also healthcare providers and rural hospitals in particular have really been strengthened by Medicaid expansion in other states.
Yeah, let's expand on that with other states. Can you elaborate on just how the rural healthcare institutions have improved?
Well, we know that, for example, the coverage of the people living in rural areas has been higher due to Medicaid, and these are paying customers now that were largely uninsured prior, and so this is revenue that helps shore up hospitals. Rural areas tend to have lower-income residents, and so Medicaid expansion can be really important to keeping up rural providers who generally have very tight margins. They're working with smaller volumes. They're far more sensitive to disruptions, and so the expansion is a real important element for the financial bottom line.
Is there any risk to hospitals with this new influx of Medicaid patients and that bottom line trying to stay afloat?
There's always a risk, and there have been hundreds of hospitals that have closed over across the country over the last few years. But in North Carolina, over the last 17 years, we've had 12 rural hospital closures, and each one can be a real disruption to that community. And we think that with Medicaid expansion, that will really dissipate that risk. It won't make it zero, but it will make it smaller.
Okay. What about any drawbacks for this?
When you look across the body of evidence of not only the expansion since Obamacare and the ACA, but years before, about the biggest thing you can say is the emergency room lines might get 3 minutes longer. Other than that, we've seen decreases in mortality and suicide rates. Health goes up. Hospitals are stronger. It really is going to be good for everyone.
And interestingly, I was looking at one study based on Michigan in 2008. They had a bit of an overhaul of their healthcare system. They actually saw that because more people were going to their primary care provider for minor things, they were not going to that emergency department, so it actually made more room for people who were suffering from more serious ailments.
That's right. It will take some time as people learn how to navigate the healthcare system, and they used to go to the ED when they were really sick, and now they understand I can go to my provider and manage that that condition on an outpatient basis rather than wait until it gets bad enough for the emergency department.
Professor, thank you so much for being here with us tonight.
Thanks, Ashley.
All right, such an important issue. Wow, I think we're going to have to stay on top of that. Obviously, Mike May's joining us now. As you can see, the radar, we got a little bit of activity back there tonight, Mike.
Yeah, a little bit of drizzle. We've had that overcast shift on in from the north and east. And all that you see that's moving, we hone in on the movement across Granville County, Vance County, Franklin County, over to Edgecombe County. That's all drizzle. Had to really turn up the sensitivity on the dual Doppler 5000 radar to see this. And all that you see here in Wake County that's not moving, that's ground clutter. So this is all drizzle up here. We're probably going to see this linger through the night and during the day tomorrow and tomorrow night as well, as that solid overcast looks like it's going to stick around. So as we said yesterday, a different look and a different feel today. 85 yesterday to our 73 today down the street at the Weather Service office on the Centennial campus at NC State. 71 was the high. Our normal high is about 79. And there's the low overcast. We have a northeast flow at the surface. All this moisture is moving in and enough moisture to produce a little bit of drizzle. We've seen that start to develop this afternoon. And cool, especially up north. Richmond's at 63 right now, 64 Roanoke, 65 at Greensboro. So tomorrow should be a cooler day than today. We're going 71. It may even be a little bit cooler than that. So you might want to opt for a light jacket tomorrow. And the reason why the setup, and I pointed this out yesterday, we have a high sitting to the north. We have low pressure offshore funneling that moist flow from the northeast down into North Carolina. And that's going to stick around through the week. I think tomorrow will be the cloudiest day. And then by Thursday and Friday, the clouds break up a bit, but it's still mostly cloudy. So here's future cast. Cloud cover and precipitation, little green blip indicates that small potential for some drizzle. Don't see a whole lot tonight. By 11 o'clock, we're in the 60s. It'll be breezy overnight with the winds from the northeast, 10 to 15 miles per hour. Waking up in the morning in the 60s, it's not that cold, but with the wind and the air being a little drier tomorrow, with dew points dipping into the 50s, may take on a little bit of a chilled feel. By lunchtime tomorrow, still a lot of 60s showing up, and then here comes drizzle later in the afternoon. Maybe even some spotty light rain. There's 4 o'clock. We head into the evening at 6 o'clock, and even by 11 o'clock, still some of that hanging around. So you might notice that more on the windshield tomorrow than what we have around this evening. So it may be a little more widespread, and it stays cool throughout the day. 68 right now, and our low overcast is settling in. You can't even see the view from our tall tower cam. 68 with a dew point at 61. Those clouds are becoming more solid. 64 at South Hill right now, 69 at Rocky Mount, 72 in Fayetteville. It's going to be a really cool evening, cool overnight, but not cold. 60 for the low here in Raleigh, 63 in Fayetteville. Pockets of drizzle. It'll be breezy. It will be overcast. 62 for Southern Pines, 57 at Roxborough. And later tomorrow, perhaps some drizzle, especially later in the day and into the evening. And there might even be a little bit in the morning for the commute. 71 in Raleigh, 74 Fayetteville, 69 in South Hill. But be aware, we may end up being a few degrees cooler than this. It will be the coolest day of the work week. The 7-day forecast shows the numbers going up for Thursday and Friday, 75 Thursday, 77 on Friday. We've got the Bluegrass Festival Friday and Saturday. There is no rain in our forecast. Excellent news, but we do have mostly cloudy skies. So as folks are strolling through downtown Raleigh and Fayetteville Street, the air blowing through between the buildings, it'll be nice and breezy and comfortable. Sunday, 76, and by Monday and Tuesday of next week, we're back to the 80s, 80 on Monday, 83 on Tuesday. Normal highs about 79. So below normal for the next few days.
You know it's Mike's birthday today?
Happy birthday, Mike.
Thank you. 5:12 this afternoon. Went up 1 year.
I like it. All right, Mike. Thank you.
We are just under 2 hours away from part one of the America's Got Talent finale. Service members from our area could take the top prize.
Up next, we get one last preview from the 82nd Airborne Division Corps. The project to repair the Cape Hatteras Lighthouse at the Outer Banks could start soon this week. The National Park Service approved a $19 million contract with a company from Massachusetts. They know lighthouses up there. The lighthouse was first built in 1868. Workers will do a lot of work to renovate the interior. They're going to restore the exterior as well. They will repaint everything, repair the metalwork, install a new railing. They're going to build a new fence and walkway. Really a complete overhaul. The work is expected to take about a year and a half to finish, so visitors likely won't be able to climb the lighthouse again until the summer of 2026.
Tonight, the 82nd Airborne Division Chorus has one more chance to impress the nation on America's Got Talent. They'll perform live tonight during the part one of the show's final round. We heard from a few members of the chorus live on WRAL at 5. They said win or lose, tonight's performance is about the love of their country.
Now, I know you dedicated your performance to soldiers that are no longer with us. Yeah. Who are you dedicating this performance to tonight? Anyone specific?
Absolutely. America. We want to let them know that we appreciate all of the support from getting over here. You know, there were so many hurdles that we had to jump just to make this possible, and it wouldn't have been possible without, you know, everybody that voted for us in the beginning and everybody that's really supported us along this journey.
You can see them perform on America's Got Talent starting in just about an hour and a half at 9 o'clock on WRAL. Tomorrow night, we will learn if they win it all. Good luck to the 82nd.
If they win it, I'm just saying, remember the little guys here at WRAL, okay?
Exactly.
We've been put, you know what I mean? Don't forget about
us, guys. We've been chatting about them a lot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us tonight here on WRAL News. Our next newscast at 10 o'clock on Fox 50 and 11 on WRAL.
Have a great night.
Keep watching WRAL News over the Air Channel 34 and Spectrum Channel 1257.